Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're taking a deep dive into Chapter 12 from Divine Conversations by Stephen Scott, the one about family and community.
It's a really fascinating chapter, packed with insights from not just those six spiritual leaders, but also from everyday people grappling with these ideas.
Right. It's like Scott dropped these figures, Jesus, Prophet Muhammad, Moses, Krishna, Guru Nanak, and Siddhartha Gautama, right into the heart of modern-day New York City.
And then just let the conversations flow. Chapter 12 kicks off with Guru Nanak and his take on family, saying it goes way beyond blood ties. He points to the Sikh concept of Sangat, the community, as this vital support system.
Like your chosen family, those people you connect with on a deeper level. And the chapter really drives home the need for that support with the story of this single mom who's struggling to raise her son alone.
Yeah, she's feeling totally isolated. And then Jesus steps in, talking about the church as a family, that classic Christian idea of sharing each other's burdens.
Such a powerful reminder that even if your biological family isn't around, there are communities ready to step up and help. But what about when those connections start to break down, you know, like in a neighborhood? The chapter touches on this with an older man who's lamenting how everyone's become so distant.
He's really heartbroken about it. And then Krishna chimes in with this amazing concept of interconnectedness, using that image of a spider web. You touch one strand and the whole thing vibrates.
It's like that saying, be the change you want to see, but on a neighborhood scale. Okay, so we've got this expanded definition of family, the importance of support. But what happens when that traditional family structure crumbles? The chapter dives into this, right?
It does, head on. We hear from a teenager whose parents have just gone through a divorce. He's completely lost, feels like he doesn't belong anywhere. And it's Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, who offers some comfort.
Now that's an interesting pairing, Buddhism and divorce.
Right, but it works so well. Gautama talks about impermanence, how everything changes, and how that realization can actually bring peace. He tells the boy, look, families change, but you're still part of this much larger family, the human family.
It's like zooming out to see the whole picture, not just that one piece.
Yeah.
So divorce doesn't equal isolation. It's just a shift in the shape of your family. But what about people who choose not to have kids or can't? Does the chapter address that too?
It does. There's a childless woman who's worried she's somehow less of a family person because she doesn't have kids. And guess who chimes in with reassurance? Krishna again.
I bet he talks about how family isn't just blood, it's the bonds you create through love and support.
You got it. He points out all the ways this woman contributes to the lives of others. He's essentially saying, look, family isn't just about who you're related to, it's about the love and support you give and receive. It's a beautiful validation that family can come in so many forms.
Makes you really rethink what it means to be a family, huh? So we've redefined family, looked at changing structures. But the chapter doesn't stop there, does it? It goes even bigger.
Oh, yeah. It tackles those big, tough questions, like how do we create community in a world that feels increasingly divided?
Right. I mean, look around conflicts based on race, religion, politics. It's like everyone's digging in their heels.
And who steps up to address this? Moses, drawing on those timeless teachings from the Torah. He talks about loving your neighbor as yourself, but he takes it further. This love, he says, needs to reach beyond your immediate circle, across all those dividing lines.
It's a huge challenge, but so necessary. It's like we're all part of this giant mosaic, and every single piece is essential.
And to reinforce that, Prophet Muhammad's Islamic perspective on the Ummah is brought in. The Ummah, for those who aren't familiar, refers to the global Muslim community.
Right. It reminds us that no matter our differences, we're part of something much bigger.
Forces you to ask, who is my neighbor? And how am I showing them love, especially when it's hard?
We've gone from redefining family to global unity. Is there anything else this chapter manages to squeeze in?
Oh, there's more. It tackles the very real struggle of raising kids with strong values in a world that often feels like it's going off the rails.
That's a worry that keeps a lot of parents up at night, for sure.
Yeah.
How do you instill kindness and compassion when the world seems to be shouting the opposite message?
Exactly. And Prophet Muhammad offers this comforting image of the family as a fortress of faith, a safe haven to nurture and guide your kids.
It's like creating a space where those values can actually take root and grow strong.
And to add another dimension, Guru Nanak's Sikh principle of seva comes into play.
I've heard that word before, but remind me, what does seva actually mean?
It's often translated as selfless service, but it goes deeper than just volunteering. It's about recognizing that spark of the divine in everyone and serving them with love and humility without expecting anything in return.
So it's about teaching kids to see the good in everyone and to actively try to make the world better.
Exactly. And the chapter suggests that practicing seva as a family can have this ripple effect. Not only are you helping others, but you're showing your kids that compassion and service are just part of life.
This is giving me so much to think about already.
Yeah.
And we're just scratching the surface of chapter 12.
Oh, absolutely. We're just getting started. But before we go any further, the chapter leaves us with this really thought-provoking question. If family isn't just about blood, who are the people in your life that make up your chosen family?
Ooh, that's a good one. It really makes you stop and consider who those truly important people are.
It does. And then it goes deeper. How can you strengthen those community bonds that matter most? It's a call to action, a challenge to think about how you can create that sense of belonging, not just for yourself, but for others too.
That's a perfect place to pause for now. We've already uncovered so much. From redefining family to exploring this idea of seva, this deep dive is already proving to be incredibly insightful.
It is, and we've only just dipped our toes into the wisdom and the challenges of chapter 12. I'm excited to keep exploring these conversations with you and see where they lead us next.
Me too. We'll be right back.
It's amazing how this chapter manages to connect those very personal family struggles with that broader question of building community.
It really does. And it's made me realize that those two things, family and community, they're not separate at all. They're totally intertwined, right?
Yeah.
Like how we operate within our families actually influences how we engage with the larger community.
Absolutely. The chapter highlights this through these conversations, exploring different aspects of community building. For instance, we meet a young activist, really passionate about social justice, but feeling burnt out and discouraged.
That's something a lot of people involved in activism can probably relate to. You know, it's so easy to get overwhelmed by the sheer scale of the problems we're facing.
Exactly. And right when she's feeling that despair, Krishna steps in with a message of hope and resilience. He brings up this Hindu concept of karma yoga, emphasizing selfless action without getting hung up on the results.
So it's about doing what's right, even if you don't see those immediate results.
Exactly. Krishna encourages her to find joy in the act of service itself. He reminds her that even those small acts of kindness can have these ripple effects that we might never fully grasp.
A good reminder that we don't have to solve all the world's problems single-handedly to actually make a difference.
Right. And then the chapter shifts to a conversation with these interfaith leaders who are trying to work together to address a local issue, homelessness. They're passionate about making a difference, but they're hitting roadblocks trying to overcome those theological differences that sometimes divide them.
A challenge that a lot of interfaith groups face, I imagine. How do you find common ground when your beliefs seem so different on the surface?
Exactly. And in that moment of tension, Moses steps in with this powerful reminder from the Torah. He talks about that Jewish concept of tikkun olam, often translated as repairing the world.
Love that concept. It suggests we have this responsibility to actually work toward making the world a better place.
Right. And Moses emphasizes that tikkun olam isn't about converting people to your beliefs. It's about finding those ways to work together, despite our differences, to help those who are suffering.
So focusing on that shared humanity, mm-hmm. our common goal of alleviating suffering.
Exactly. Then we hear from a group of young people who are frustrated by that slow pace of social change. They're eager to see the world become a more just and equitable place, but feel like they're powerless to actually make a difference.
Again, a sentiment a lot of young people, particularly those passionate about social justice, can probably relate to.
Absolutely. And it's Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, who offers some guidance. He reminds them that lasting change takes time. Patience, he says, is a virtue. But he also encourages them to cultivate a sense of urgency, reminding them that every single moment is an opportunity to make a difference.
Finding that balance between patience and persistence.
Yes. And then the chapter moves on to a challenge many of us face every day, building meaningful connections with people who are different from us. We meet a woman who lives in a diverse neighborhood, but mostly interacts with people from her own cultural background. She wants to reach out, build bridges, but feels awkward, unsure how to start.
That's a common experience, I think, especially when the world often feels so polarized.
For sure. And in that moment of uncertainty, Jesus steps in with a message of love and compassion. He reminds her that the Christian call to love your neighbor extends to everyone, no matter their background or beliefs. He encourages her to approach her neighbors with an open heart, seeking to understand their stories and build relationships based on mutual respect.
It's a reminder that building community starts with those one-on-one connections.
Absolutely. Then the chapter shifts to a conversation with some parents who are concerned about the impact of technology on their kids' social development. They see their kids glued to screens for hours, neglecting those face-to-face interactions.
That's a worry a lot of parents share today.
Yeah.
Like, we're raising a generation that's digitally connected but socially isolated.
It is a concern, yeah. And in this moment of parental anxiety, Guru Nanak steps in with some wisdom. He brings up that Sikh principle of seva, selfless service, and suggests that encouraging kids to get involved in acts of service can help them develop empathy, compassion, and that sense of connection to the larger community.
So finding ways to balance that screen time with real-world experiences that actually build community.
Right. And then the conversation takes an interesting turn, exploring the role of forgiveness in creating strong communities. We hear from a man who's been deeply hurt by someone in his community and is really struggling to move forward. He wants to forgive, but it just feels impossible given the pain he's experienced.
Forgiveness is such a powerful concept, but it can be so incredibly difficult, especially when we've been deeply hurt.
It is. And as he's wrestling with this, Prophet Muhammad steps in with a message of healing and reconciliation. He draws on those Islamic teachings about forgiveness, emphasizing that holding on to that anger and resentment ultimately only hurts ourselves. He encourages the man to find a path to forgiveness, not just for the other person's sake, but also for his own well-being.
It's a beautiful reminder that forgiveness isn't about condoning what someone did. It's about freeing yourself from the burden of all that anger and resentment.
Exactly. And as the chapter starts to wrap up, Krishna offers a reflection that ties everything together. He reminds us that building strong communities, it's a journey, not a destination. He emphasizes that it takes continuous effort, a willingness to embrace diversity, and that commitment to seeing the divine spark in every single person we meet.
It's a beautiful reminder that we're all in this together. And creating a more just, compassionate, and interconnected world is a responsibility we all share.
Absolutely. And it's a responsibility that begins right here, right now, in our own families, in our own neighborhoods, and in our own hearts.
Wow, that's powerful. Chapter 12 really packs a punch, doesn't it? It's so personally relatable, but it also speaks to these global issues.
It does. It's left me reflecting on all the ways I can contribute to building a stronger sense of community in my own life.
Me too. I'm already feeling inspired to reach out to my neighbors, get involved in some local volunteering, maybe even practice a bit more of that seva in my own daily life.
That's fantastic. And remember, even those small acts of kindness can ripple outward. It's about taking those first steps, even when they feel awkward, and trusting that our efforts, however small, are contributing to something much bigger than ourselves.
It makes you realize that building community isn't just about these grand gestures. It's about those everyday acts of kindness, compassion, and connection.
Absolutely. And it's a message I think we could all use a little more of these days.
It's really incredible how much this chapter covers. I mean, we've explored everything from redefining family to these big global issues like social justice and interfaith collaboration.
It's like Skinnitt took those age-old questions about belonging and purpose and put them in a blender with modern-day life.
Right. And he definitely doesn't shy away from the tough stuff either. Like, how do we deal with conflict within our communities? Things can get pretty heated, especially when it involves people's deeply held values.
Absolutely. And the chapter actually captures one of those heated moments. There's this community meeting about a controversial development project, and it's about to erupt into chaos. And that's when Prophet Muhammad steps in. He reminds everyone that in Islam, respecting others, even when you disagree with them, is so important.
So it's like finding a way to disagree without being disagreeable.
Exactly. He stresses the importance of listening to each other, really trying to understand those different viewpoints, even if we don't agree with them.
Right. Remembering that everyone comes to the table with their own experiences, their own understanding of what's right and wrong.
And sometimes the best solutions come when we're willing to put our egos aside and really listen to each other.
Yeah, it's a reminder that building a strong community means being willing to have those tough conversations, even when they're uncomfortable.
Absolutely. And from there, the chapter shifts to a conversation about something that's crucial for any community. Trust. We hear from a woman who's lost faith in her local government. She feels like they're not representing her interests at all.
That's a feeling I think resonates with a lot of people these days. There's this growing distrust of institutions.
It's definitely a trend we're seeing. And in that moment of disillusionment, Guru Nanak comes in with some wise words. He talks about the Sikh concept of Sach truthfulness. And he reminds us that you can't have a real community without a foundation of trust.
So it's not just about leaders being honest. It's about creating a culture of transparency, right?
Yes. He suggests that to rebuild trust, you need open communication. You need to be willing to admit mistakes. And there needs to be a real commitment to serving the needs of the community.
It shows that building strong communities starts with those in positions of power. They have to lead with integrity and create a space where everyone feels heard and respected.
And then the conversation takes this really interesting turn. It explores the role of art in creativity and building a sense of community. We meet a young artist who's struggling to find her place in the world. She feels like people don't get her art, like she doesn't belong anywhere.
I think that's something a lot of artists, especially those just starting out, can relate to. Putting your work out there is hard, especially when you're not sure if it'll resonate with anyone.
It is. And it's Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, who offers some encouragement. He reminds her that art is this incredibly powerful tool for self-expression and connection. He tells her to use her art to share her unique perspective, to trust that it will find its audience.
It's about recognizing that art can be a bridge between people, even if they come from totally different backgrounds or have different beliefs.
Exactly. He says true art comes from this place of authenticity. And when we share our art with the world, we're offering a part of ourselves.
Right. It's a reminder that art can be this amazing force for building community.
And as the chapter comes to a close, all six spiritual leaders come together in this beautiful moment of unity. Despite their differences, they all want the same thing. To create a more just, compassionate, and interconnected world.
It's like they're modeling the kind of interfaith collaboration that we desperately need to see more of today.
It really is. They recognize that to build strong communities, you have to embrace diversity, you have to learn from each other, and you have to work together toward a common goal.
It's this really powerful message of hope and unity.
It is. And it's a message that everyone can take to heart, regardless of their religion or background.
This deep dive into Chapter 12 of Divine Conversations has been so inspiring.
It really has. I hope you found it thought-provoking and insightful.
Remember, building strong communities starts with each of us. It's about embracing diversity, practicing compassion, and working together to create a world where everyone feels like they belong.
Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.